My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. Today I'll be chatting with my friend Drew Hodgson. I know I've only put one episode out per week these last couple weeks. As you will soon learn, I have a reason for that. We've been much more regular over these past couple months, and that should continue on into 2021. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe or leave a 5-star review on iTunes. You can do both too. And follow Drew on Twitter at Drew Hodgson. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Seth C. Payne, and enjoy the show. People are listening to your episodes like almost all the way through, almost universally, which is rare. Like over 90% of the people are listening all the way through on a podcast episode. So don't overthink it. Sometimes it feels stupid, or like we're not talking about anything at all, but that's actually what people enjoy.
Well, I appreciate you calling that 10% of failure to my attention. So I'm going to do everything I can, Seth, to bring more energy, to bring more organization to this. So I'm just gonna go sit in the dark and just drink.
It's been I'm telling you honestly, like if you have over 90% of the people listening all the way through, that's really rare. So that's good. And also the only reason that I've actually done one consistently over the last 2 weeks has been because you're a much more mature and responsible person than me. Because what I'll disclose right now that I hadn't done on air. We actually talked about whether I should talk about this on air or not on my radio show, and we decided not to. But I had the COVID, without going into too many details. I had the COVID these last couple weeks, and I was working from home. And part of it was I didn't want to make light of it, like while I had it. I was afraid that I would make light of my experience, and in doing so, kind of minimize or just undersell the seriousness of the issue, which I have a tendency to do. So I wanted to wait until I got through the clear, and my wife and child got all the way through the clear. So it looks like we're through the clear. I went out in public today, and frankly, it felt kind of like the first time, like when you can first legally purchase alcohol and you're doing it and you feel like you're getting away with something that you shouldn't be doing. That's how I felt. Right. I was standing as a store clerk behind my mask. I was like, oh, you don't even know.
Did you offset it, you were just putting candy bars in your pockets just to walk out? Like, yeah. No, it's fine. No, really, I am doing something wrong.
There were people like standing less than 6 feet away from me in line. And I was just like, I don't know. Like, should I tell them? Should I tell them? The CDC says I'm clear, but I don't feel like I should be out here.
Right.
So I had the COVID, and it was kind of bad. I thought I was going to get away. So my wife came down with symptoms a little bit before I did. And I thought it was going to be no big deal, but it ended up, and I talked to you about it. I think it felt a little bit like mono must feel like. I felt really, really run down. I didn't feel as bad in terms of the classic flu symptoms that you might have. So any of that stuff, whether fever or nausea or body aches or anything like that. I didn't quite feel those same symptoms, but I just felt like a complete lack of energy for like 10 days. And I was, right. It was all I could do to do my radio show from home and then just kind of sit around like a slug for the rest of the day.
That's what's been so weird about it too, is that, and we talked about this a little bit before, is that there aren't these clearly defined symptoms outside of the ones that everyone already knows about that are just in the media. Like if you don't lose your sense of taste or smell or have an obvious, I might have pneumonia type experience,
yeah,
then you don't really know. And that's how I felt too several months ago when, you know, I'm almost certain now at this point that my brother and my sister-in-law had it and, you know, I was exposed to them. And I felt like right around the same time, it was the same. It was like mono. I just had no energy. I was in bed all day. And I just chalked it up to just crippling depression.
Yeah.
But, you know, but maybe, you know, maybe there's more to this. There is a pandemic going on. So
did you get the, I guess you haven't gotten the antibody test yet. You might want to.
I haven't gotten the antibody test. Yeah.
You should get it just to get documentation. I feel like we're headed towards having biological passports or something in the next 6 months. And that it might behoove you to if you want to go to a
yeah.
event or something to
get, like, yeah, that's a good point.
I have a vaccine or antibodies.
Yeah, I'm always up for anyway to, you know, bring metrics to the biological side of things. I think it would just, you know, be great. I always try to do that. Just chalk it up to give me my BMI, everything else.
Yeah. Like, yeah. All, like on one passport, the
exactly. Yeah.
Gattaca. It was Gattaca the movie with Ethan Hawke.
Yes.
They had everything yeah. all documented all the time.
Yeah. Underrated yeah. movie. Uma Thurman.
Do you find yourself at all during this pandemic? Like I personally don't give a damn about like feeling like my personal freedoms are being impinged upon or anything. I worry sometimes, wait, am I a little too sheepish? Am I a little too accepting of Big Brother coming in and telling me to do stuff? Because I hear people complaining about losing their freedom by way of wearing a mask, and like it doesn't move my needle one single bit. There's not a part of me, like, honestly, I feel like, dude, if I had to like show a picture of my scrotum to anybody to help get everybody through the pandemic a little bit faster, I'd say cool, whatever. Yeah, that I gladly relinquish my right to privacy for this brief
moment. Same. Yeah, that does not register with me one bit. It's all seems a little overly reactionary to me. I think that ship has kind of sailed. Like once you realize you're accepting cookies for every single website you go to, like I think we're good.
I don't know. Yeah, I read in some article once, it was like right before Facebook had their huge breach a couple of years ago, it was some tech guy writing about how, well, privacy concerns, nobody cares about the privacy concerns anymore, everybody's just signed off on that. And then all of a sudden we had like a big in your face moment of, oh yeah, you're really screwed in terms of your privacy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know. So anyway, for me, I tried to figure it, like, okay, if I were an athlete, what would it be like coming back from this? Because sometimes you worry, you wonder if some of these guys, when they're coming back from the COVID vaccine or from the COVID list, if how they're going to respond to it. You know, Cam was kind of out of it for a couple weeks, and it looked like he was coming back and looking more like his old self. And then you realize, oh, okay, but he's also just not that good anymore. So it's impossible to tell what was COVID and what was not. If I were to go out today and practice on a football field, I think I'd be pretty miserable. Like, I think it would take me, even though I think I'd be cleared to practice and everything, I think I'd feel kind of run down and not quite myself.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
What was that? You sent me that article of like the effects on college kids. What is that mostly? I didn't read the article, Drew. Is it is it mostly myocarditis? Is that what they're concerned about?
Yeah, exactly.
The heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the big takeaway is it doesn't really ever seem to have a problem except when it does. And so just keep that in mind, that it'll never be a problem except when it is for you. Well, you know, and I'm like, well, I can't do a whole lot with this information.
I was thinking about that because I started doing my cycling, like about, I took 3 days off and then just started going really, really light. Just try to get some kind of exercise.
Peloton.
Yeah. But like not doing the classes or anything. But yeah. I there was like one part of my brain where I thought about the myocarditis and thought, all right, is this something I'd actually have to be concerned about? Because it happens when people get the flu anyway. the swelling of the heart there. You just never, they don't test for it in normal right. conditions, where now they're testing for it and they're going to find a certain number of athletes get this myocarditis afterwards.
Yep.
So I guess it's one of those things where
what's the baseline?
Yeah. If you want to want to be super careful about it, you could go screen for it, but I don't know if I even want to know. It's not like I'm out there trying to break personal records or anything on my little bicycle.
And that's how it's been for a lot of this stuff. Like when I see all the stats around the percentage of hospital beds in each individual city that, and I'm sure it just seems through context that it's probably a big deal, but I also have no idea how many are normally taken up like on any given flu season at all.
Right.
So it's like, I just have no bar to compare it to for all these things.
Well, that, you know what, that's what I wonder too, is now that we're testing so much and you're starting to get a sense for how many people can get this and not have any symptoms. Like, what's it like in a normal flu season?
Right.
Do people, because the flu, I never realized until all this either, that the normal flu test is pretty sporadic because of all the different strains of the flu, that you could have the flu but test negative for the flu. So, like, how often do we get a flu virus, but we're also asymptomatic for it?
And the efficacy of the flu vaccine, too.
Yeah.
Is for some of them are only 10 or 20%.
Right, because of the strains.
You know, why bother at that point?
But that's where we're so ignorant when it comes to actually like caring about the whole instead of it. Like we think of everything as the individual. Like, well, okay, it's only going to give me a 20% protection. Yeah, but if everybody gets 20% protection, then you reduce and minimize the chances of everybody else spreading it. I'm talking about the flu vaccine now, not the COVID vaccine, which is 95%.
No, you're an anti-vaxxer. I think that's clear. I think we've all, that's the big takeaway.
The takeaway though, since going back to the mask stuff, is compared to some of these Asian societies, especially, we're almost like, we almost have a mental block in terms of actually being able to think about the collective compared to thinking about our individual freedoms. It's so foreign to still a lot of people when they resist wearing a mask. When you hear them make the arguments, it's still based on like, well, this is an inconvenience to me, or this is an assault on my freedoms, or I don't worry about if I get it. Like, yeah, but if you get it and you pass it on to somebody else, all that.
It's that charming, rugged individualism that we all come here for.
The rugged individualism that I thought was, which is awesome. But it also is, there's a certain amount of selfishness to the American ethos that I guess I didn't quite recognize or understand. And going through everything, I would say over the past 4 years or so, I've really realized that a lot of people that I assumed just would have been more altruistic, I suppose, or more community minded. It's actually the exact opposite. Like they're really all about like, I gots to get mine. Screw you.
Yeah. Well, and it's that feeling of not, for me anyway, it's like where you're not quite understanding the rationale there when you think, you know, well, this will be better for you too if we all just do this. It's this pretty selfish move to just, if you just wear the mask and if we all do, then this will just be over and it's going to be good for you too.
Yeah.
Like why it's such a minor inconvenience. I mean, it's not like you're wearing it in your house. I mean, we're all inside most of the time anyway, who cares?
It's the Chronicle, Houston Chronicle had an article the other day that said that 1 in 7 people in Houston have now had it based on antibody testing that they did, more like randomized antibody testing, I suppose. And there's a division along racial lines. The white people, it's like 1 in 20. I want to say Hispanics, it's closer to 1 in 5. So for whatever, you know, and then some of this comes down to socioeconomic stuff of like who's able to work from home, who has to work in
who are in professions that expose them more likely to it than not.
But that's where
did that seem high or low to you, or did that sound right?
That sounded about right. Cause I remember early on, I was figuring, you know, when everybody thought they had it, you know, back in late April when everybody thought they had had it. And the Major League Baseball study came out and it showed that only like fewer than 2% of Major League Baseball personnel had had it. And those are people that travel quite a bit. And you realize, oh, wow, we're probably not that extensive at all. So I don't know. I like at some point, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now, we'll actually have some perspective on all this and figure out how we could have done it differently. And right. then, you know, 50, 60, 70 years from now, we'll have forgotten all of it and we'll relive the whole thing.
Yeah. We'll be on like COVID-37 by then.
Yeah. Yeah. Has COVID affected your sports viewing at all? NFL ratings are down 5 to 10%. And for a variety of different reasons, you could talk about whether it's, you know, there's the election. There's some people that have objections to social justice initiatives. There's just the flat out competition from baseball and basketball to a level that we haven't seen before. There's the erratic nature of the scheduling where,
right.
where marquee games like the Steelers all of a sudden are being played on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, or the quality of the product and the teams not performing like they usually do and then dipping and totally.
Have you watched less football?
I started out watching a lot less initially because it just felt so unimportant, I think, relative to other things. And I think it was weird. My media viewing habits, I thought that it would have gone way up. I thought that I would have just been glued to the screen because I was so anxious for a sense of normalcy. And then I think when I started watching it, it actually became so clear how abnormal it was. And then I realized I was just chasing. It just was not going to be normal. It was the disconnect was watching the game, that the optics, everything was normal as it always is. And then as soon as they zoom out and you see no one in the stands.
Yeah.
But all the cheering was still happening.
Yeah.
It just felt too Orwellian. And I had to like check out from it. It was too weird.
On the Thursday night game last night with the Raiders, they were playing like a jet engine, it sounded like a jet airplane taking off and landing continually. And yet that, for some reason, that was the moment in the pandemic where it was just all too much for me. And right. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? That felt like some kind of science fiction movie. Like,
yeah.
Why is this the noise they're choosing? And you're right. I was kind of cool with everything at first, and I liked the fake crowd noise. The longer we go with it, the weirder and weirder it gets to me. When I think about these guys, I just try to put myself in the player's position where they've gone through an entire season now where it's like a Saturday morning scrimmage. The environment in which they're playing the game usually, you know, except when there's 10 to 20,000 fans in the stands. But in a lot of these games, it's just like a scrimmage.
Have you found that when you do see them making big plays and they are celebrating and their reaction does look pretty genuine, how excited they are to have made a play like that? I'm always stunned that it's even that enthusiastic. Like, I feel like in that scenario, I actually wouldn't really be that bought in to that, that moment.
I always wondered if you'd feel kind of naked, right?
Yes.
Like, the audio is so clear. And that's what's so weird. The seeing the checks, I sent you that video of Deshaun Watson making a check in the game last week. And they're not like the quarterbacks aren't even yelling. You know,
no.
Can you imagine it sounded like Nick Martin, the center, and Deshaun Watson, the quarterback, were just having a casual conversation. Like they're in a film room, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like they were just having a casual conversation.
Yeah, which would be so bizarre. I mean, so much of it is I give them credit for how they must be adjusting to their professionals. I mean, clearly, it's never has it been more on full display. But at the same time, it has to drain some kind of the energy, right? For like the excitement for. I mean, people would say, and I know you probably got this all the time, where they say, God, I can't imagine what it must be like to have the crowd just going crazy. And just and I don't know about you, but it was. There were maybe only a handful of times where I actually took notice of all that going on around because you just have to be so dialed into what's going on. Otherwise, you're guaranteed to make a mistake.
I always the goal line stands were always the coolest part. That was where the noise really mattered because I like as a defensive player.
Right.
Especially at home when you're on a goal line stand, that just I always felt like you absorbed energy from the crowd by osmosis. It was really cool. And then you add in the confusion factor. Because it's so loud there in the end zone and the opposing team is just they are having such a hard time getting their audibles and checks made that part was always really, really cool. I always really appreciated that part of it.
Well, especially on defense, because you have the benefit. You have the benefit of both being a Neanderthal where you don't really have to think or do anything other than just like look at lines on paper, but also – you know, you're trying to disrupt the offense.
Yeah, but that's the other part about being at home on defense is you can't hear the linebackers make their checks and like change the blitz or their direction. It gets really confusing. As a defensive lineman, especially, you're blind. You really can't see what motion is going on a lot of times. So they'll be making a changing a call, and you just flat out are clueless about it. So
what about the cadence and other things right now with the lack of crowd noise and getting people off sides? Do you think it's more effective now?
I bet it's more effective. It seems like it. It seems like they're. It seems like I've seen more games with multiple. By the defense. But I also wonder, like, I'm watching that Raiders game and Derek Carr checked to a run and I can't remember what it was, but it was some kind of East, you know? So like, all right, if they know your live calls, it's a lot easier for the defensive player. So for the listeners, usually if it's East, that means you're going to the right. If it's West, they're going to the left, which I've always actually been kind of impressed by, because I figure like out of 11 football players, there's usually at least one on the team that struggles a little bit. Like east west is kind of an abstract notion, you know.
Well, it's even the dyslexia comes into play where I have to flip it like I'm in a mirror, you know. I'm like, look, half these guys, they struggle just on the normal right and left, but if we just, you know.
Oh, the worst football coach I ever had was in high school, and he came in and his whole system was, instead of the holes being 2, 4, 6, 8 on the right and 1, 3, 5, 7 on the left,
right,
he numbered the holes from right to left, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So like off tackle, that was like the one hole, or off tight end was like the one hole. So for anybody listening, usually on the offense, I think in every other system I've ever been
every
in,
system,
the offense, the holes, like the where you might run, between the center and the guard is the 2, between the guard and the tackle is the 4. Those are, and then on the left, it's the odd numbers. This guy not only changed it to like the sequential 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, he went from right to left. So everything about it was counterintuitive. We were so bad. He got brutal. fired for flirting with a cheerleading coach, I think.
on a completely numerical related
issue. Yeah. So I thought of you the other day when I heard Tom Cruise going off on his production staff on his movie. I don't know if you heard that. Did you hear Tom Cruise just flipping the hell out on people for violating COVID protocol? Just reminded me so much of being on a football team. But like, I always thought on a football team, man, if somebody ever tried this in real life, there's no way in hell I'd be working for this person. But I guess it still does happen, right? Like, there are still old school places where the boss gets everybody together and screams at him and yells at him and tells them that they're no good trash. And I don't think I would put up with it. And I know, I know that you have worked in the real world for a long time now. And I know you have at least one instance where you like flat out didn't put up with it.
Like in the normal corporate professional world. Yeah. That's not really gonna fly.
Did you physically threaten a boss of yours once, or do you not want to talk about that?
Yeah. I'm trying to decide right now in the moment if I want to throw myself under the bus or not. I think I can, because it's kind of irrelevant.
It was a long time ago. It's not an industry that you're ever going to go back into.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, the world's a volatile place. Maybe he's dead. Who knows?
At some point, this guy who he was a manager of yours that just like, he thought he was Vince Lombardi, right?
There were a few factors at play. There was the natural energy of, he was short.
Yeah.
He was a short guy. So there was like this Napoleon complex, I think, at play going on. And it was also really kind of my first post football job. And so he had the like disdain of having to work with me directly, who was still, you know, by normal standards, like normal human standards, I'm like twice his size, you know, whereas in football standards, I was the one with the Napoleon complex.
You always felt like you were the little guy. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And so he was a solid, you know, 9 inches shorter than I was and 150 pounds lighter. Right. And so he always felt like he had to compensate anyway. And we just were oil and water, like right out of the gate. And then I remember one day he had just said something to me and he was just berating me. And it was kind of, you know, it's funny when you're so used to enduring that from a football standpoint, where you actually, people don't realize you have a pretty high threshold as a football player for just the amount of abuse you're willing to take.
Yeah. Yeah. Real it's just becoming, it becomes normal. Like it becomes normalized. You if you're a good team player, you sit there like a little beta and just let
people and take it.
Shit all over you. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But then but you realize it's kind of one of those, like, it's the same thing when you're on a losing team and they lose the locker room. Now that's over. That's all gone. Yeah. You just are not going to take that anymore. It's kind of like the mutiny has begun and we're going to take over the ship at any moment. And we're sitting there and that was kind of I had the end of it. And he had just told me, and he's like, yeah, and you're going to be there at 5:30, whether you like it or not. And I told him on the phone and I was like, well, you know what? I will be there and I'll see you in the parking lot. And maybe we can just take care of this. And it kind of just slipped out so fast because you can tell, like, once the wheels are turning, it's just whatever I already decided I'm going to say is just going to come out, and it's going to come out pretty clean. But I just hadn't fully articulated how quickly I could get arrested. And so he was like, oh, okay. And I was like, yeah. See you tomorrow.
You threatened your boss.
So I get, this is my boss. And so then I remember clear as day, I get a phone call from kind of like the corporate office number. And I knew, and it was at like 4:30 in the morning. And I was like, awesome. I'm getting fired. Yeah. I'm getting fired right now. And it was our branch manager. And he goes, he's like, hey, buddy. And I was like, oh, hey, what's going on? And he's like, hey, you know, I know you got stuff going on this morning. Hey, can you come into the office maybe like now? And I was like, sure. You know, and I'm like, I'm not even going to shower. I'm not even going to bother. Like, who cares? I don't need to shave. I'm just going to come in. And I go, and I said, he goes, yeah, why don't you just, you know, shut the door, have a seat. I'm like, okay, sit down. I'm like, this is great. It was one of those things too, where you just feel so empowered. Like, I'm going to go in there. It was like office space. Like, I don't even care.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just,
You felt genuinely free in that moment. Like, you weren't worried about completely. Consequences.
Yeah. I was like, look, this is a win-win. Like, either way, he's going to let me go and that's fine. And in the other scenario, I'm going to get to beat up this guy. And so that's great too. So, you know, like,
was there a part of you that thought that, like, maybe they'd set it up? Like, they're like, yeah, right.
Totally. Yeah. There's unmarked vehicles. There's like a flower van, like with no windows.
You like into a basement, like Fight Club. Everything's just bare brick walls and you're totally ready to go.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been great. Yeah. And he goes, he's like, look, I just got to tell you, I just can't have you beating up your coworkers. We can't do that here. And I get it. And I was like, yeah, I get it. And I'm waiting for him to tell me. And he goes, that's really it. I mean, I just, you know, you're fine. You're not fired or anything. I just, from now on, just don't threaten the other guys. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, but we've all wanted to, every single one of us.
That guy specifically.
Yeah. He's like, we all have. You're not the first guy. You're not the last guy.
Yeah.
It happens to all of us. And I was like, this is really it. And he's like, oh yeah, no, you're fine. Yeah. Go on.
Well, that company you were working for, like, they kind of, they hire hyper-competitive people, right? Like,
100%.
So it's almost like it sounds like, from the people that I know that have worked at that company, it sounds like the way the Seahawks are, like, their culture is just hyper-competitive. So because of it, you get guys that have been in the Seahawks locker room say there's confrontation. Like, there's going to be confrontation because they specifically are looking for guys that will fight and scratch and claw, like, whatever they got to do to win.
Oh, so, completely.
So you're in this. So in that environment, you probably, like, there was always, I was always surprised coaches like Tom Coughlin or Bill Parcells, and guys who are like extreme disciplinarians, they actually had a pretty high tolerance for guys going off on them because they kind of felt like, yeah, well, I create a high pressure environment. And I also want guys that are super competitive, and every now and then they might flip out, but it wasn't like the end of the world if you did. Like, I snapped on Tom Coughlin once.
Which I could see.
Yeah, they kind of, like, they tweak you the wrong way. And I think in their minds, they're kind of happy when it happens because they feel like, yeah, I'm getting to them. Like, these guys got some juice. They've got some energy.
Yeah, mission accomplished. I pulled it out of them. Look at how good I am at coaching.
Yeah.
Did you feel like Houston felt not at all that way for you?
No, it felt really, it felt really tame. Some of that was just the changing times, because guys, when when I was in Jacksonville, Marcus Stroud was a first round draft pick, and he got in a fight with Mark Banowitz once, who is this huge, huge Polish kid out of Syracuse. He was like a he was like you would have thought he was like a meathead caveman, but he was actually a Rhodes Scholar. And but he was and like also like a 6 foot seven specimen, just like V taper back and everything. So he and Marcus Stroud, who is a big physical freak himself, got into a fight one day in practice, Marcus Stroud's rookie year, and Stroud broke his hand on Banowitz's face. And I remember everybody saying, like, oh, wow, wow, what an idiot Stroud is. I can't believe he punched somebody with a with his helmet on. I'm like, no, he got Banowitz's helmet off and broke his hand on Banowitz's face. And Banowitz didn't even, like, bleed from it because he was that much of a physical specimen, too. And after that, Coughlin himself got, like, cracked down on fighting. They were always super. They were always kind of cool with it before and almost encouraged it, like old school NFL. But after that, he cracked down on it. And Capers, I think, was kind of the same way because of a couple incidents like that. He had it strictly banned. And then the culture was just kind of that after that. And I don't with Kubiak, I don't know if Kubiak, if it had always been like that. But I know going back to like Bill Walsh's days with the 49ers, Kubiak coached for Bill Walsh. I know they were very anti-fighting. And I know that. Because Jerry Rice told us a story at the Super Bowl one year about how they had an equipment shed that there were strict anti-hazing and no fighting rules in San Francisco, but they had a spot behind the equipment shed where they would actually go to fight when they had to stuff out. Were like super old school, like behind the out by the flagpole type stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like code though, almost. Just go behind the shed, guys. It's fine. Yeah, whatever you're doing back there is fine. Yeah, we're fighting. We're totally fighting. Yeah,
You and Mark Sherman didn't always get along, right? When he was your position coach?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. Yeah.
Did you ever snap on him?
I kind of did. Yeah. It was funny. This is what I learned. This is either the healthiest or most dysfunctional way to handle all your aggression. And I haven't figured out what it is. It comes out in, and I've definitely figured out how, I've taken inventory of how I manage this professionally now too, is I have all these different mechanisms because you can't, as I learned and mentioned already, you can't just go around beating up your coworkers.
Yeah.
So instead I have like these other passive aggressive, sarcastic ways that I like manage it. And like one of those with Sherman for sure is I think I trained him to realize how sarcastic I was. And so he had just been like, I had already been watching other guys around me who I felt like were playing terrible. And I'm just like having to watch them every day. So I'm like stewing on the inside, just like already boiling. And I'm just like listening to this guy just like berate me for no reason. Uh-huh. And he had already just kind of badgered me relentlessly that day. And I was just not having it. And he's explaining, you know, this is how you do it. I told you, Hodgdon, this is how you do it. And I think he also would say my name wrong too, which would just like drive me insane.
Yeah.
And so I turned and I just told him, I screamed at him. I was like, you're not the boss of me. And everyone was just so stunned by it. But I just kind of put on this face like I was clearly joking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was like that moment of what's going to happen now?
Yeah. And then it's a dumb enough thing to say.
Absolutely. Like,
it's just such a toddler thing to say.
Of course.
Yeah. There's no way that you like. And I've seen coaches in that moment before where they got to make the decision of like, all right, wait a second. Am I going to be a hard ass here? Or I'm going to laugh this off. So yeah. You can see him doing the calculations in their head and he decided to just laugh.
And I think he decided too, that he actually genuinely thought it was pretty hilarious. Yeah. And so he just started laughing and I had never seen him laugh either. It's kind of like, it's like when you see like, you've always known like a cop in your neighborhood and then you suddenly see them out of uniform. It's just like startling. And so seeing him actually laugh was one of the weirdest moments ever. And it like thankfully diffused it. But I would love to push him down the stairs if I had the chance.
If I saw Mike Sherman wearing like a pair of dad jeans with a polo shirt with a shirt tucked in, just walking through the grocery store.
Exactly.
That would weird me out a little bit. Right.
It's weird. It's not right.
I never want to see seeing a head coach in a grocery store to me would like actually doing his shopping. That would be way weirder than seeing my teacher in a grocery store. I still think of the way when you're a kid and you think of your teachers as not being normal, real people. head coaches are way like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yet I know some of them must go to the grocery store every now and then, right? Like, even I just can't envision it. It feels super strange to me.
Yeah, like, do they ever not wear the polo or the khakis? And it's not as much that way now, where you see guys like wearing sweats and
wearing like the bike brand shorts.
Yes, hey, exactly.
I got to run. I got to pick up my wife's medication before the post office closes. I apologize. Listen, 90% listen through is a really, really good number. Don't beat yourself up over that 10%. You don't want that 10%, okay? I'm sick of you with your self-defeating behaviors and attitudes. We'll talk. We'll reconvene.
This is not self-defeating. This is how you get better.
No, it's not. It's how you go slowly insane and end up miserable. Hey, we had a question on the show tonight. This morning. Let me ask you this. You just stew on this for a little bit, and I want you to have an answer for me the next time we come back. Is a billionaire who commits suicide a successful person? Good day.
Oh, my God, I hate you. Fuck.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.